Saturday, May 19th, 2018. Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant, independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Well, I usually like to try to take 1-2 days off over the weekend to kind of zone my mind out so I'm not completely bombarded with all the negativity that we see all day, every day throughout this job. But there's just too much important stuff going on, so I wanted to make sure and get a show out there for you today. I'd like to begin with something written by Caitlin Johnstone today that really stood out to me, and I'd rather just read you what she wrote because she's very eloquent, and if you aren't familiar with her work, I highly recommend you check it out because she does a very good job of kind of exposing the BS on both sides of the aisle. Gina Haspel has been confirmed as America's new CIA director, fulfilling her predecessor Mike Pompeo's pledge to turn the CIA into a, quote, much more vicious agency. Bloody Gina has reportedly been directly involved in both torturing people and destroying evidence of torture in her long and depraved career, which some say hurts the CIA's reputation. Others say it just makes it more honest. It really couldn't be more fitting that the U.S. now has an actual, literal torturer as the head of the CIA. It also couldn't be more fitting that it has a reality TV star billionaire president, an Iraq-raping, Bush-era neoconservative psychopath as national security advisor, a former defense industry director as secretary of defense, a former Goldman Sachs executive as secretary treasurer, and a former Rothschild Inc. executive as secretary of commerce. These positions have always facilitated torture, oppression, war profiteering, and Wall Street greed. The only thing that has changed is that they now have a more honest face on them. The mask of the nationless Orwellian oligarchy, which dominates our world, is slipping off all over the place. And as if we needed any more examples that the mainstream media is their first line of defense in trying to hide this fact, the mainstream media channels obsess over the royal wedding, talk about how the FBI spied on Trump, or continue to be consumed with the shooting to keep selling tragedy for political reasons, while they ignore the huge ongoing scandal with the Catholic Church and pedophilia, that the UN just opened an investigation into Israeli war crimes, and Facebook partnering with a NATO think tank. Oh, but sure, let's talk more about an irrelevant wedding and its elite occultist family members, because that's important. Just like when their lies about the Skripal case imploded or their fabricated story about Syria fell apart, they simply give the people bread and circuses. For the first story of the day coming from ZeroHedge.com, all 34 bishops in Chile suddenly resign over absolutely deplorable pedophile priest scandal. All 34 bishops in Chile have tendered their resignations in the wake of yet another pedophile priest scandal in which high-level officials covered up the institutionalized sexual abuse of minors, even threatening officials tasked with investigating sex crimes and the destruction of evidence. 31 active bishops and 3 who are retired signed a document with their offers to resign following an emergency meeting this week with Pope Francis. Francis can accept the resignations one by one, reject them outright, or delay a decision. As the author finishes, for all of the holier-than-thou admonishments in his letter, Pope Francis is not without blame. The Associated Press reported earlier this year that Francis drew scorn over his appointment of Boros Bishop of Osnoro, Chile in 2015. The Associated Press reported earlier this year that Francis did so over the objections of other Chilean bishops who knew Boros' past was problematic and had recommended he and other Karadima-trained bishops resign and take a sabbatical. The AP subsequently reported that Francis had received a letter in 2015 from one of Karadima's most vocal accusers, Juan Carlos Cruz, detailing Boros' misdeeds. That letter undercut Francis's claim to have never heard from victims about Boros. Francis further enraged Chileans and drew sharp rebuke from his top abuse advisor when, during a January trip to Chile, he said the accusations against Boros were slander and said that he was certain Boros was innocent. So now this is yet again up to Pope Francis to move forward with this, despite the fact that he has a long history of continuing to cover these things up, as they all have for a very long time. And as we just said, the fact that he knowingly allowed this specific priest to continue on despite all the other people speaking up, and the fact that he knew his history. This is a good thing to see it getting attention, but nothing has actually happened yet. Unless Pope Francis accepts their resignations, which he hasn't in the past, he tends to to allow them to move away and kind of just covers everything up and kind of chalking this up to like a moral slight as opposed to a crime that it is. And that's the other thing to consider, that just because they retire, does that mean they're just completely, they get away with everything they've done? I mean, that's how these things tend to go, especially in the Catholic Church. So this is a story that we're going to have to continue to keep an eye on because it's a very big deal, and it's something that's been going on for a very long time. I mean, there's even been movies made about this kind of stuff, yet people continue to pretend like it's not really happening. It's a very interesting case, but the fact that all 34 resign at the same time, I would even say that there's probably something even bigger behind this. But so we'll have to keep track of this, and I really hope that Pope Francis at the very least accepts their resignations. But I want to see criminal action take place here if this is really what's going on. And as a secondary point, this is exactly how easy it is for the Q crowd to be misled. A Q post simply saying the Pope will have a bad May, and suddenly the ongoing issues of the Pope that have been happening for a long time become Q predicted this. And of course, if nothing had happened like this, then no one would be saying anything. And even this specific case in Chile, not just the long ongoing case of pedophilia in the church, but this specific case in Chile, Titus Frost has been covering this for months. So it's very easy for them to pick a developing story or slightly obscure story or even just generalized ideas and allow the Q crowd to jump all over them with their expected conclusions. So please don't fall for this. Moving on to the next story coming from globalresearch.ca, IDF snipers ordered to shoot Palestinian children, Israeli general confirms. An Israeli general has confirmed that when snipers stationed along Israel's boundary with Gaza shoot at children, they are doing so deliberately under clear and specific orders. In a radio interview, Brigadier General Zvika Fogel describes how a sniper identifies the, quote, small body of a child and is given authorization to shoot. Fogel's statements could be used as evidence of intent if Israeli leaders are ever tried for war crimes at the International Criminal Court. Fogel adamantly defends the policy, stating, at the tactical level, any person who gets close to the fence, anyone who could be a future threat to the border of the State of Israel and its residents, should bear a price for that violation. So that's a very important point to step back and think about what he just said there. Of course, all of the other points, the propaganda gets mixed in saying that Hamas is using them, of course, ignoring Hamas's clear connections to Israel and how it was created, that they're using children to push them forward as human shields and all of this. But this is assuming that every single person in this massive protest is part of this organization, which is verifiably untrue. There's a lot of innocent people there. And so simply seeing children near the fence throwing stones or whatever they're claiming to shoot them simply for like he says right there, it's paying a price. They are saying, if you come near the fence, this is the price for that. And that is a human rights violation. That is a war crime. That's a very big deal that the general just openly admitted that they're told to shoot children. Regardless of all the context around that, that is an important point to take away. Moving on to the next story coming from MiddleEastEye.net, UN to investigate possible Israeli war crimes after Gaza massacre. The UN Security Council resolution failed to agree on the initial probe into Israeli actions, despite being near unanimous, because it was vetoed by the United States, as it all too often is. However, the United Nations Human Rights Council, where no veto power exists, voted on Friday to assign international war crimes investigators to look into Israel's excessively lethal response to Palestinian protesters. Israel killed over 60 Palestinians just on Monday, including 7 children, bringing the total to 101 Palestinians Israel has killed since they began the Great March on March 30th. In that period, Israel has killed 11 Palestinian children, 2 journalists, 1 doctor, 1 person on crutches, and 3 people with disabilities, and 6,938 people injured, including 3,615 with live fire. Now, these are the facts on either side of the table. Some just dispute the context around it, but understand, when we're talking about the children that have been killed, the doctors, the journalists, these are not disputed. That's a very important point to take away moving forward with this investigation, and clearly why this investigation is moving forward, while simply, I guess, the United States, Australia, and Israel vehemently oppose it. But clearly, there's enough information around this for them to move forward with an investigation. And to no surprise at all, Israel's claiming they will not cooperate with UN probe on Gaza killings. Israeli officials announced Friday that they will completely refuse all cooperation with the new UN probe. Israeli officials are expressing outrage at the probe, saying it proves an anti-Israel bias at the UN Human Rights Council and amounts to the body supporting terrorism. U.S. officials also condemned the decision, though without a veto, they were unable to block it. And now Israel is even seemingly turning against the U.S. Israeli Defense Minister Avigdor Lieberman is now demanding that the U.S. immediately withdraw itself from the UN Human Rights Council as a way of punishing them for supporting the probe, even though it didn't seem like they did at all. I think they're just kind of lashing out there. U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley didn't indicate that such a withdrawal would happen, but complained that the UN should be investigating Iran or Venezuela instead of Israel. Big shock there. Clearly, that's something they always focus on. But this is a very interesting case happening here, how, one, this investigation is moving forward, showing you that almost everyone there agrees that what Israel did is absolutely horrendous, and that only the United States is blindly defending them, which is very revealing. And hopefully Americans can see that the world consensus is that what they did was horrendous, and that the United States is essentially backing them for political reasons and has nothing to do with human rights. But the fact that they're refusing to adhere to what they took part in, they're part of this council and they're refusing to listen to what they have to say, that's a big deal. And think about if that was in reverse. Think about that was any one of the other countries. Of course, the U.S. and Israel would be bringing down hell on them, saying, oh, well, you can't do that. You're part of this council. But of course, when Israel does it, it's okay. I bet you will see nothing happen from this, because Israel's not, they're going to completely just not allow any of it to move forward. And I'm sure the U.S. will blindly back them like they are. But it's I find it interesting how the Israel is kind of lashing out at the U.S. there. I wonder what that shows us. Moving on to the next story, coming from the antimedia.com, Muslim countries call for international force to protect Palestinians. A summit of Muslim leaders in Istanbul on Friday, chaired by Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, called for an international force to protect the Palestinians after Israel killed over 60 on the Gaza border. Now, this is a very important story, but I want to just touch on it quickly because I think it highlights an important point. One, clearly based on the UN investigation, we can see that the consensus here is that Israel needs to be held accountable for their very clear crimes and human rights violations. But Erdogan, of all people, is the last person that should be heading up this international force to bring this, to call these things out, because he's very guilty of a lot of these things in the past, as a lot of them are. But a lot of the people involved in this, you know, developing international force probably have good intentions. But I think what we're seeing with Erdogan here is a kind of a power move. He's trying to use what he can clearly see is everybody beginning to recognize Israel's crimes as a way to put himself in a good light and kind of, you know, shift geopolitical power in his favor. So that's something we need to be cognizant of as this goes forward. I don't think Erdogan's intentions in this are true. Moving on to the next story and the final story of the day, coming from activistpost.com, Facebook announces partnership with think tank connected to NATO military-industrial complex. On Thursday, Facebook announced a new partnership with, of all groups, the Atlantic Council. The social media giant said the partnership is aimed at preventing Facebook from, quote, being abused during elections and to fight fake news by using artificial intelligence, as well as working with outside experts and governments. Facebook goes on to describe how the Atlantic Council's digital research unit monitoring missions will be monitoring traffic during elections and other highly sensitive moments. Facebook claims this will help the company monitor for misinformation and foreign interference, which is highly subjective, as well as the usual tripe of protecting democracy. Essentially, the Atlantic Council allows individuals or nations to push forth their ideas under the cover of hiring what appears to be a public relations agency, but is actually selling access to high-profile individuals with power to affect public policy. So having Facebook on their roster seems like a pretty big deal. Indeed, everyone from George H.W. Bush to Bill Clinton have spoken at or attended council events. Despite the promise to document human rights abuses, one would be hard-pressed to find a single item on the Atlantic Council website mentioning the human rights violations of the United States or any of its allies. And its website literally regurgitates the establishment talking points as independent facts. The list of financial supporters reads like a who's who of think tanks and non-governmental organizations. The Atlantic Council receives funding from the Brookings Institution, Carnegie Endowment, Cato Institute, Council on Foreign Relations, and the RAND Corporation, to name a few. In addition, various members of the military-industrial complex are benefactors of the Atlantic Council, including Huntington Ingalls, the United States sole maker of aircraft carriers, Airbus, the plane manufacturer, Lockheed Martin, the shipbuilder and aviation company, and Raytheon, which makes missile systems. If there has ever been a more clear-cut sign that Facebook, as well as all the other major social media platforms, are simply extensions of the government, I haven't seen it. Just one more reason for those platforms to be abandoned for less restrictive blockchain-based alternatives where censorship does not exist. As it is obvious, they are stepping up their efforts to control everything we see, hear, discuss, even think. As Caitlin said in her article, it is always a good sign when people in power become concerned that their subjects are developing the wrong kinds of political opinions, because it means that the truth is winning. All this gibberish we've been hearing about Russian disinformation and Russian propaganda is just a label that has been pinned on dissenting narratives by a mass media propaganda machine that has lost control of the narrative. And this is why it's getting so overt, barely even attempting to conceal its true nature anymore. Our species' newfound ability to network and share information has enabled a degree of free thinking that the cultural engineers did not anticipate and have not been able to stay ahead of. And they're being forced now to make more and more overt grabs to try and force us all back in to our assigned brain boxes. So today, right now, is a more important time than most even realize. And the choices you make in the next few years might just be some of the most relevant in your lifetime, in social media, in politics, in general. So step back and think carefully and support not what is the easiest or what's most promoted, but that which embodies what you feel represents the future you want to see. As Caitlin said, we're winning, even if we don't realize it, which is why it seems to be getting so much more intense. So to quote Indiana Jones, choose wisely. For more information on the topics discussed, make sure you check thelastamericanvagabond.com or any important independent sources in the show notes below. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.